Hello, this is Christy Sayer from One Inch Par Scary Podcast, and how are you doing today? I have been thinking of you out there, the people I know who listen routinely. You're so loved by me. I'm grateful to you for listening. I care about you. I think about the I think about the format and the quality of the information that I'm putting out. I don't want this just to be this kind of like stream of consciousness, self-indulgent moment for me where I kind of just spill my guts or feel like I have so much wisdom to share with just the world at large. I really want this to be a service that is tailored toward some of the issues that I know that you guys have shared with me. And, you know, of course, there's other people out there who I may not know listen, and I love you just as much. And so, you know, there's no way for me to know exactly how this can be helpful to everybody and specifically. So it's really with my soul's prayer that I feel, you know, led to do this and try to do it in a way that it says wholehearted and as pure as possible, you know, without, I find that if I'm in a certain kind of mood when I just want to rant, it's probably not the best. It's probably not the best service. So in saying all that, I want you to know that I've been thinking a lot this last week about how best to serve. And my instinct was to just hold off on today's episode until I was feeling more grounded. And so that's why we're just, you know, maybe just a week overdue. It didn't feel right. And so I'm back. It feels right now. I'm in my van. This is back a throwback to mental notes from the minivan. I think actually my last couple of episodes have been from the minivan in the parking lot of one of my favorite places, the woods, prior to a long run, which I don't really experience any other kind lately because of this marathon, which I am currently in Hell Week, which means that I'm really peaking in terms of my training, and after this weekend I will be tapering somewhat. So I'm getting to kind of the threshold in that physically. I'm feeling quite tired. I'm getting slightly bored maybe of the whole thing, and I'm ready to scale back a bit, but there's this last little push. So there's that I've been preoccupied with, and it was for that reason that I wasn't really sort of paying a very close attention to why I might be feeling flat in general and sort of agitated. And I really did just blame it all on that. You know, it's taxing. My kids have had a lot of emotional needs lately that I really want to be there for them. They're going through a lot, and I am trying to be as good a support as I can of them and of some other friends who are going through legitimately difficult times right now. And I don't know, people have just been so good to me that it's just my fondest dream and hope that I can be anywhere close to as helpful to others as they have been to me. So, without further ado, let me tell you a little more in the hopes that this will be helpful to you. So, I was feeling worn out and just flat and really sort of like passed it all off on this training business. And then I noticed that there was a day that I felt really, really, really triggered. And I knew that because the only way forward I could see was to go to bed and cover my head, go to sleep. And I couldn't find a way to express to people. And when I lose my voice and there's just this flatness, like I don't know what to say to people about how I feel. I can't express how I feel. is a sure sign that there's something going on that's really hooked into that childhood PTSD or the issues related to it. So I'm very happy to say that as this process goes on, it really does get easier. And I think, you know, there's that very dangerous part that I've talked about a lot, where you think you're getting better and you're so hopeful about that and you're so excited about it. And then you get slapped down hard and then you're like, will this ever, ever end? And for the most part, I can say that that actually has become, I have a sense of, yes, it does. But it doesn't mean that you'll never get triggered again and there won't be hard or flat times, because I've experienced those several times since I've been feeling significantly more stable. I still get triggered. Things still make me sad. I still have days where I feel more flat. I still have days where I really need to take more time for myself, or I don't have the capacity to be there for my family as much as I'd really like to be. And I just am, I feel a lot more patient about that, because I do, there is an upward trend and there is hope, but you can't be expect to be like miraculously healed of all sadness or any pulls on your psyche forever, because that's just not human, you know? And so I'm learning how to be a lot more patient and kind and grounded with those demands. But so after that afternoon where I just really slept for 3 hours solid, which I'm so lucky to be able to do from time to time, it just so fit that nobody needed me, which was great. And I was able to parse it off as, I am physically tired and need this to myself, to give myself permission for that. And it was just a really fortuitous opportunity. I was looking on Facebook memories and I saw, whoa, this is the anniversary, in fact, of a really traumatic period of time a year ago where I broke the story of my childhood abuse without speaking in any kind of coded language. And I was like very forthright with what had happened without going into any explicit details or any, you know, truly sordid details. I wasn't interested in triggering anybody who might read it, but it was with regards to why I didn't report. There was like a trending hashtag. And one day I just felt a sense of very calm, peaceful, but also a very compelling need to ask the questions. And it was related to this trend of why I didn't report, that so many people cite their mothers in this, and a lack of an appropriate response or support from their mothers, going all the way to denial, punishment, rejection, horrible, horrible things that so many people have had to experience when they did go to that person who should be their first and foremost protector for help or to tell the stories. It just turned out really horribly. And I sort of pointed that out. I said, look, I have never really address this publicly or, you know, without using coded language regarding my abuses, but it was my stepfather and then my stepmother was entirely complicit in how, in terms of how she protected him when she did find out what was going on, when she suspected what was going on. She will deny that to this day. She is very adamant that she was in no way complicit. This is false. And there is no longer anger or a need for retribution or, and neither was there on that day. And I think that's really important, that when we tell these stories, sometimes if we aren't in a space of great rage, it can be so much more helpful. Because for me, it was just the sadness and this, why do mothers operate like this? What happened to them to create that? And it truly was that way for me. At the time that I wrote that, I remember just feeling like it was outside of me. This needed to be said now, and it needed to be done in this way, which was very, very much questioned by many people and is questioned to this day as to the appropriateness of that. And it always makes me laugh when people are like, is this appropriate for the victim to be really spreading all this in such a public place? And I want to be like, how about you go back to the abuser and ask him if it was appropriate to do this to a child or children in the first place? And then you go to the victim's wife and ask if it was appropriate for her to stand by her man, or if it's appropriate for her to still be with that man. I think it is hilariously repulsive. I mean, you can just kind of laugh in an hysterical, you know, you laugh so you don't cry way for people to even bring up any sort of appropriateness when it comes to how a victim tells their story. Would it be inappropriate for somebody who was raped and beaten and is on the side of the road to pick themselves up and go running bloody and torn and tattered and desperate and wounded into a church, which was having a very sacred meeting at that time? Would you also tell that person, well, this is not the right place for you to go? This is inappropriate. You ruined this moment. I mean, that's crazy. The victim should not ever need to consider the appropriateness of anything when telling their story. And that's something that I have really learned to recognize. Now, look, are there going to be opportunities to tell the story where the victim is less likely to be hurt by response, or less likely to be further wounded by the audience she chooses? Absolutely, yes. And we have been down that road on this podcast where I've talked about, you know, what Brené Brown calls the friends, the marble jar friends who have earned your story, earned the right to hear your story. And you need to be very careful that you don't sort of cast pearls before swine. But, you know, she's referring a lot to shame stories, and victims need never feel any shame, and they should never feel any sense of having to hide or, you know, not disclose to anybody, because light and publicity shed on a story where the victim has been forced to feel the shame of the perpetrator really does heal a victim. So, you know, if you're a victim and anybody has ever said to you, you should not have told that story, you should not subject others in your family to that story, you need to take that responsibility and say, that's not my burden to carry. If you have an issue with how this story hurts anyone, you need to take issue with the person who started the story. That's something I really didn't understand for a long time, even at the time that I broke the story. But my soul knew it, the wisdom inside of me and the wisdom outside of me from the source of divinity, from the source that's kept me alive all this time, knew the right thing to do in my case. And I'm also not saying, hey, if you don't go on Facebook during a time where, and I actually did it during this trending hashtag time, so that the story wasn't all about me. I could have done this in a much more sensational way. I have the platform, and I've mentioned that before when people accuse me of being attention mongering or sensationalistic. I'm like, yo, if I wanted to make this a big, huge thing all about me, there were other opportunities and I could have used them. This was during a time when honestly everybody was telling their story, and I really was completely flabbergasted by how much attention it got, because it was really, it was a moment of a sort of solidarity for us to all stand together, link arms and go, this is why I didn't report, right? It wasn't a moment of, okay, Kirsty has waited all her life for this big old moment and now it's going to break and she's going to have so much sympathy and support and you know, like, I don't know. There was nothing there was no credence to those accusations, which have continued. And that's honestly, that's not my problem, but those do continue, and that those allegations have become part of the narrative that continues to be spun to this day, and, you know, is supported and sort of peddled by lots of people who I really expected so much more from, and who I've so profoundly lost respect for, and they know who they are, and I want them to know, because I suspect that they listen, that while I don't have anger or hatred or any desire for retribution from anyone, because, you know, that's between them, their God, their conscience, and the fact that they have to deal with, there's got to be some kind of disconnection to them, for them, from the source of goodness. But I want to say that when you do this kind of thing, you guys who are supporting my parents in their story, when you support the wrong people in these stories, you are making the world so much less safe for your children and your children's children. And for those who have always admired you and looked up to you and maybe trusted you, who are victims themselves, you have made the world less safe, and you are no longer a safe person. And that's a terrible tragedy, because the world needs more safe people. The world needs people like you. And you have shrugged off that sacred responsibility. And some of you, I know, had that trust. You had my trust. You had the trust of my siblings. And you have gravely disappointed us and betrayed us. And I think that needs to be said. And I didn't come into this podcast with any kind of grievances or any kind of anger or any desire to call anybody out. And I'm certainly not going to do it by name. The time for that is well past. But if you are listening to this, and if you are somebody who has been a sympathizer with somebody who was accused of abuse by their own child, you know, look inside, look deep inside, and recognize that, you know, the people who abused me are managed to keep that whole narrative going for a really long time, and still manage to keep it going, because they're very skilled in lying, both to themselves and others. And yes, they even were very skilled in lying to me, so that I damned myself to a childhood and adulthood of pain and anguish and self-shame, and miraculously was able to bust out of that. But it was difficult. So know that I understand that it's very difficult to see through this kind of thing, but one should really, really, really look deep within yourself and look at sort of all the evidence in front of you. And when people have lost touch and trust with, you know, at least 4 out of their 5 kids, there's something wrong. There's something very, very wrong there. And, you know, my own children have lived with those people and can attest to the fact that there's something very, very off there, and it's not with them. So, you know, that goes out to anybody who likes to listen, just, you know, as a voyeur to my pain, which is basically what you've done. But spinning this now towards the positive, which is really what my intention always has been, to show the healing side of this story, is when I broke that story, my brother accidentally shared it. There was no conversation, you know, okay, here's the day. This is it now. I'm sick of these people and they're going down. It wasn't that kind of thing. There wasn't kind of any prior solidarity assured from anybody. I just sat. I remember it well. It was a beautiful day. In my gazebo, it was a Sunday, I believe. The sun was shining. I was calm. I had a quiet space. I was in a quiet frame of mind. And that is when I told the story in as non-sensationalistic and as balanced way and as honest and truthful way as I possibly could. And when I went back and read it, I was proud of it, even more proud of it after a year than I was of it that day. That day, I felt very little about it. But I was proud of how I handled myself. And what happened then was that my whole family, including the abusers, who I have sympathy for, because they are so very, very out of touch with what is right and good and pure. And that to me is very sad. Went through a harrowing and excruciating time. But who I care for so much more in this was that my innocent siblings, who did stand by me, at least three of them, my two sisters, my brother Seth, were dragged through this pain along with me in a very public way, which they've never chosen. They have never chosen to put their lives out in a very, very public way. And Seth, who is extremely averse to that, picked that up and ran with it in such an incredibly courageous way that I will never be able to repay him for that courage. And you know, during the time, right after the time that I actually broke the news of this to my siblings, I was sure I would lose them entirely. I was sure that my, you know, the narrative that had been built against me was so powerful and so strong that I had every expectation of being rejected out of hand. There was no hope in my heart whatsoever that I would have the support of my siblings. I was just, you know, I felt there was nothing left to lose. And something broke inside of me when I told them. And I was so pleasantly surprised when they immediately rallied around me. Three of them did. And I was stunned by the courage and the goodness of those people and so freaking grateful for it to this day. And it was, you know, I got a lot of support from people online telling me, you know, how brave I was and how courageous I was and how sorry they were for the pain. But, you know, the MVPs in this story, as far as I'm concerned, are the siblings who rallied around me, who was still in South Africa at the time and had to take this stuff head on and deal with the apologists. And my one sister is still there having to deal with the apologists in the most painful and heinous way. And it's, you know, it's, you know, she's lost her support group in terms of her parents. She's learned things that are so harrowing and so despicable to her soul that resonate with her, that make her understand things about how she herself feels now, which are repugnant to her. And then she had to just deal with that head on and deal with people not supporting her appropriately and defending her. And to this day still do. And that is just horrific to me. Horrific. And so sad. And honestly, the insensitivity of these people. And, you know, she really doesn't complain. She has been so, and, you know, if you think she's coming to me and telling me these stories and complaining to me, that's not the case. I've completely heard this, you know, the long way around through the grapevine. And she has been so stoically supportive of me to her own detriment, as has my brother. So these are the people, you know, and my other sister in Cape Town has quietly, you know, suffered alone through many, many things. So these people really deserve your respect and your support in just as much as I do. Just as much. They are brave, brave, good people of incredible integrity, courage, and character and stature. And I am amazed at them. And truly, you know, our parents must have done something, because they turned out, you know, three people that I would, you know, I have so much respect for, that I am just, you know, I don't know people of so much integrity and character. You know, many people like that who have handled that and still stood by me. And I'm so grateful for it. So I can't express that enough. But the on the other hand, the pain that I inflicted upon them was really, really hard to watch, considering I'd been so, so invested my whole life in protecting them from that same pain. And so knowing that I'd opened them up to that kind of scrutiny was excruciating. And knowing that they were processing things very, very intensely and not in their own chosen time, I might add, the way I was able to, was a horrible responsibility that I did not take lightly. And so it was a harrowing, harrowing time. There's no way else to put it. For my siblings, and then by extension for me, knowing what they were going through was awful, awful. And, you know, still will. They're further behind on this process than me because they found out about it much more recently and have to go through things at their own speed and in their own time. And this does take a very long time to unravel. But like I said, on Facebook yesterday, I have not for a split second regretted the decision to break this story in the way that I did. And that is because there was no other way. There was no other way. And I see that now, to sidestep at least some of the gaslighting that is able to happen when you don't have the support of people outside of the house that has been built up by narcissists and liars and abusers. It's just really, it's so, so difficult when you don't get the feedback from other people that, what? This is crazy. This is not normal. This is, you know, you've got to get that outside feedback. And we were very lucky to have it in a very public way, where there was enough public outcry from enough mutual people. And you guys are the real MVPs also, who said, nope, not on my watch. Good people, you know, good people who I know really respected and loved my parents prior to that, but with unequivocally supported and loved us through this and believed us and never questioned us for a moment. That was life-changing. And you guys are the people that make the world safer. And I love and thank you forever for that. So that, you know, recap on things I've said many times before, thank you. And if you're listening to this and you were in no way involved in our story and you're just, you know, sort of listening and trying to learn from it, please be that person. Always be that person. You know, convey yourself as a safe person to kids, to teens, to people who might be abused. People can sense that if you are the safe person. And if you have established yourself as a safe person, never betray that trust. Never betray that trust. Because I have had people in my own family who, or extended family, who really have signaled, safe person, safe person. And then went so far as to, when I said to them, you have not stood up for us as a safe person, have said, oh, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. We're so terribly sorry for what you've been through. We, you know, what can we do to make it right? And then fortunately, I was like, no, you've already kind of showed your colors. I don't know. I don't know. And I withheld from engaging further with them. And I was really glad I did, because they reaffiliated with the abusers and really sort of showed why they couldn't be trusted. But those were people who signal themselves as safe people in general. So those are the people that I want to say, if you're going to establish yourself as a kind of person who cares and is safe, never betray the trust of a victim. Never betray the trust and courage of a survivor who tells you their story. Don't do it. It's so wrong. And if you are a person who is unwittingly just reading Facebook that day and happened to see this and went, oh my hell, this makes it awkward. I love the Randalls and I love being part of their family and I love being their friend and I love their story and I liked what they represented of this good Mormon family, this solid Mormon family who was turning out high achieving individuals and attractive people who seem to be functional and really seem to, you know, have it together and show how this whole Mormon thing works out well. And now I'm going to have to detach from that beautiful story and accept that it isn't what it seemed to be and support these people and believe them. And then did so? That's amazing. And thank you. And keep doing it. Because once you do it for somebody, you might, you know, and people see you, do it, you've signaled to others who are watching that you're that person. And it's a heavy burden. It's a heavy burden to carry, but it's a really sacred trust. And so if you were pulled into this against your will, or you really rather you hadn't been, I understand that. And you know, I grieve with you over that, but my gratitude is full. And I think it's part of your particular curriculum that you are doing well in, that you have supported a victim and you have stood by survivors and done the right thing. You know, so much love and thanks to you. And you are part of our healing story. I don't get to tell the story of my siblings, and I've been very, I'm very clear in that in my own mind. And so you'll have to, you know, hit them up for how they're doing. But I will say, as a very protective and loving older sister, that while I am so sad for the pain that they've had to go through since being forced to process this so in such present and intense ways, while I'm so sad for them, I still feel like I did the right thing. And you can read between the lines on that or not, or go directly to the source is something that I will always encourage. It's so important to get the story from the horse's mouth and not from anyone else, if that's the story you want. And then accept that if the horse isn't willing to talk and says, I'm sorry, this is not a story that I want to share with you right now, or I'm done telling the story, please refer to the original one, please refer to what I've already said, then don't take that personally either. Because this is, you know, if you want to help people, don't do it out of a sense of being a voyeur or being able to break another side of the story to, you know, your cronies who want fresh gossip or whatever that is. Be respectful, be an actual helper. So I've learned a lot through the year about not taking on the burden of appropriateness. That is not my problem. And in fact, I'm really allergic to that word, because that's a story that, that's a word that Ken Randall loved to use. And you'll note that I'm using his name now because, you know, it's, he doesn't have power over me anymore. He doesn't have the right to my silence. But Ken Randall would often use the word to whitewash whatever the things that he had done, the truly horrible, heinous, depraved things that he had done, as inappropriate. And they were not inappropriate, Ken. They were devastating. They were defiling and they were disgusting. And we mustn't use those words when we harm God's innocent little children, lest we, it's better for us than, you know, better for us that we have a millstone around our necks. But, you know, inappropriateness regarding telling a story, regarding getting the help I needed, regarding saying, nope, I'm not trusting you and you and you with my story anymore, sort of finding those boundaries, finding my voice, finding my strength in I have done nothing wrong, has been what this year has been about. And that's a very empowering thing. Painful, but empowering. And it has helped me to establish other boundaries in my life that needed to be there, and to become a better mom as well, to recognize that there were boundaries that my children had that I was not even, you know, aware of, that appropriate boundaries that kids need in terms of just being able to tell you when you're being wrong. I wasn't even conscious, you know, I wasn't really conscious of a kid's right to say, you know what, your needs do not trump my needs. And while I hope I'd never violated those in anywhere near as grievous a ways as my parents and my mother and my stepfather did, I've been excruciatingly cognizant of being very aware of my kids' voices and also of reminding them that when things come up later in life that they might remember and I might not remember, but those things have hurt them. The only thing I'm interested in is how to help them. And if helping them means that I apologize for things I don't remember or I have blacked out of my mind because I really needed to believe that I was better than that, or I did such a bad job of mothering that I have pushed it down into my subconscious. If what they need is a fervent apology from me, that's what they're going to get. And what they need is me doing anything I can to help them heal. That is what they're going to get. And hearing their voice and hearing their side of the story in any kind of circumstances that affect us as a family, that's what they're going to get. And I think that, you know, that's the best anybody can do at, you know, at any point of your child's progression when they realize that they have a voice which is respected and believed, and that you are willing to apologize and not stand firm in your infallibility at any point. You're going to be a much, much better parent for that. So I've been really blessed with that. You know, things that I sort of knew cognitively before, but a really deep and profound sense of this is your sacred responsibility, and where you have fucked up in the past, be sure, sister, going forward that you do not, because now you really know and will be held accountable. So, you know, becoming a very mindful mother in terms of those responsibilities has been a great, great blessing to me. Great blessing. And I'm at the point in my life where I do not look back at all and go, why me? Why did that sweet child, that particularly sweet, innocent, wholehearted, tender, compassionate little girl? Not that I think any child, even obnoxious ones or suspicious ones or mean ones or bullying ones, need to ever be defiled in that way. But I was like, why this particularly kind little girl? Why, you know? And I'm like, well, clearly, you know, they tend to be targets. But I don't think that at all. I think, wow, you know, that was part of the curriculum for me. I'm not angry. I'm not mad at God. I'm not mad at whoever I, you know, believe the divine source to be, or whatever I believe the divine source to be. I feel very, very much more in touch with that than I ever have been. It's still something that is very mysterious to me, but I'm more in touch with that source than I ever have been, and grateful, so grateful, gosh, for every single way that it has led and held and protected me along the way, including when I was so angry and distant and rejecting of it. It was holding me even more gently and even more completely through other people who were there for me. And the emotion that I feel right now is just one of such deep abiding gratitude and love for the fact that I was never ever left alone. I've never been truly abandoned, as hard as it has been and how alone I felt. I can look back now, and I'm not going to start reciting Footprints on the Beach. Don't worry. It's not going to be anything overplayed like that, but I can look back now and know that at every time in my life there was God represented, or God, source, divinity, support, and this universal compassionate love and power, visceral electric power, represented in a form that I could recognize, even if it was just me sensing as a child, I will be okay. You will be okay. This is not you. This is not you. You are good and pure and whole. Something in me always held on to that, or whether it was a person who would text me in the middle of the night, or show some sign of kindness, or listen to me cry, or listen to me just rant for months. and not lose patience with me as I have with so many other people. And so I know how patient you have to be with somebody this wounded through that hard time. I just really wanted to convey that I just feel so much love, so much gratitude, so much desire to pay it forward, and so much hope for the future. I feel like my life is only just beginning, that I'm only just beginning to scratch the real purpose of my life, that really, you know, just scratch the tip of that and see what it's all about. And so excited to get to know, you know, what life has in store for me in terms of my purpose and how I can help people. I'm so excited by that because I just feel like, it's not me, it's, you know, my mission and how I can be used is by this amazing, this amazing source of support that I felt will now be and will can now use me. And I'm thrilled to see how it will, because it's so much bigger and smarter and more patient than I am. And I'm so not alone in, you know, whatever it is that I'm supposed to be doing. It's not going to be my plan. And I don't want to sound like a big religious fundy, because I'm certainly not. I haven't returned to any kind of religion, but I am deeply spiritual again. I feel a sense of connection with that power every single day all around me. And I find a great amount of peace in the silence with myself, which is something I've never experienced before, and a great amount of peace even in times of terrific turmoil that used to easily undo me before. So my gratitude for that is just so immense. Thank you for listening to this kind of ramble. As I was delivering it, I was like, where are we going here, sis? Because it touched a little everywhere. You know, there was some righteous slam downs there, which I wasn't anticipating. And then, you know, here we are, basically just tying it all up in one big, beautiful bow of gratitude, which is really where I am now. And I hope that that gives you hope. Even though a couple of days ago, you know, I had to take to my bed for a real long nap. I'm okay now. I'm standing. And I will keep standing. And I will not just keep standing. I will run and soar and climb mountains because, not because of any greatness, but the greatness that's in all of us, that I now have clear vision and access to, and clearer vision and access to all the time. And so do you. And I wish you all the healing, all the hope, and all that sense of peace that you are held by a kind universe. That I cannot deny. Much as I tried to and wanted to for a long period of time, I cannot deny. And I'm glad I can't, because I know it's true for all of you. And the time will come and can come that each of us can tap into that and feel really the breathtaking power of it and our potential and the potential of our full and complete healing in time and the goodness and the help and the power and the joy that we can experience in this life and then pass along to others. So it's an exciting time ahead. Complex PTSD is not a life sentence. PTSD is not a life sentence. Abuse, neglect, people not believing you, none of those things are a life sentence. The depression that you're in now is not a life sentence. I've been in really, really dark holes at different times in my life, and I would have really liked to hear my voice today telling myself it was going to be okay. And so if you're there now, I want you to pretend that it is your own inner voice, because it is. It is your soul. It is whatever connects to your soul telling you right now that you are going to make it, and you are loved, and you are strong, and things will get better, and things are going to get lighter, and easier with time. I would have liked to have a more strong and forthright voice for that little pep talk, but it comes with all my love and sincerity. I love you. I'm here for you. You got this. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.